Welcome, everyone, to the Cybubber Security Podcast. It's the cybersecurity podcast with a little extra BS. I'm Andrew Nuxel.
And I'm Nathaniel Big.
And Nathaniel, I have some good news for you. You have free credit monitoring coming your way. Bad news is it's because of all the breaches that are out there. So we have quite a few to talk about today. That'll be our driving topic.
Yeah, we definitely do. So we'll start off with Change Healthcare. So on February 21, Change Healthcare got hit by what looks to be the infamous Black Cat ransomware group, also known as ELF-V. And they are also involved in some other recent attacks, such as the MGM hack. We talked about that last year. And so it looks like they were able to cause a cyber intrusion, and they shut down a lot of healthcare services. I know some colleagues and friends were talking about how they had to fill out paper prescriptions. So it really had quite an impact across delivery of prescription drugs for a lot of hospitals and pharmacies. I think they cover almost 1 or 2 thirds of patient data transactions. So yeah, quite a big deal.
There are some other companies that they also do business as or close affiliates, United Healthcare, another name that is part of their group. And I know, just from talking to several people, that brand or the Change Healthcare brand overall may not be what's on different insurance provider cards, but in the background, they're the company that runs it all. So you're right. It was extremely widespread, the number of people that were impacted or could be impacted downstream from this one.
And it's pocket change for them, but it seems like on March 1, they were able to track a cryptocurrency address that is linked to Black Cat. So what is it's hypothetical right now because there's not confirmation out there necessarily, but it looks like Change Healthcare may have paid the ransom to Black Cat, which further kind of adds to our issue because now these hacking groups are further incentivized to attack companies.
Yeah. The rumor is $22 million, and that's a lot of money. We talked about it again back during the casino hacks and such. It's unfortunate, but a lot of times it comes down to a business decision. And for those that aren't really abundantly familiar with the process that takes place when ransomware is the root cause, more often than not, the hackers that load that ransomware are very good at providing technical support and do give you the access back if you pay the ransom. Otherwise, people won't pay the ransom. So it's really become a challenge for cyber insurers and decision makers, cybersecurity leaders, executive teams when it comes to a breach. You hate to enable bad behavior. You know, the FBI and most government agencies would tell you absolutely not, do not pay the ransom. But then you have the financial people in the background and they're saying, well, if I don't do this, I'm probably going to be exposed in a healthcare industry. Think about it. You know, if you can't provide the healthcare that people need, especially when you get into some of the programs like Medicare and Medicaid, and there are a lot of government regulations around that and how timely and effectively you provide the healthcare. So when it comes down to paper records and all the other nuances that they end up having to fall back on, they get really scared about not having that data in their computer systems available. So they make
a couple other notes too. It looks like this is tied to the Black Cat ransomware group. Well, in December, the FBI was supposed to have taken it down. Well, why are they still out there? Well, it doesn't look like they took all the affiliates down. And it seems like a group, not necessarily tied to one specific person. It's just a group and type of ransomware. Does seem to be Russian-based. Whether it's backed by Russia is kind of up for grabs. But it is interesting to see that even though an attempt was made to shut them down, it still seems like they're very viable out there. And there's a lot of rumors going online about how Black Cat didn't necessarily release compensation to all its affiliates. There's a lot of interesting talk in the dark web about they did and how Change Healthcare reacted, whether they maybe didn't play it nice with the hackers, or that's at least the hackers' opinion. So it's kind of really fascinating right now, all this back and forth on the dark web about this attack too. That's where we're getting a lot of our information right now. We don't have a lot of information. Originally, I think it was last week, a lot of people were saying, oh, this is linked to the Screen Connect vulnerabilities that were out there. And as we got further along, Change Healthcare said, no, actually not. So we're still evaluating. It's ongoing.
One of the interesting, again, who knows, can believe them, but one of the sources of information was actually related or affiliated with this hacking group. And the way the ransomware number got out was they said, oh, it was 22 million because we were supposed to get X percent of it. And Black Hat, the team, just went offline mysteriously. So they're hiding, trying not to kick up any dust or let anybody get under their trail. But it also sounds like, as you mentioned, there's a lot of potential leads. Like they have the cryptocurrency wallet information. It seems like there's some other information that they have. So maybe it'll lead to some arrests. But like with any gang or organized crime activity, what's the likelihood that if you go out and you cast your net, take down one of these networks, that you get everybody? I mean, it's highly unlikely. So just because they shut it down temporarily, the people are either going to resurface on their own, the group's going to rebuild, or they're going to affiliate themselves with some other hacking organization and try to exploit it that way. So wouldn't be surprised if we heard more from them in the future.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to our next bit of good news. Bank of America reported that...
Or free credit reporting.
Yeah. Hey, I have so much free credit reporting. I looked at Have I Been Owned the other day and put my email address in there. And it's disgusting, like going back how many years, all the things that you show up. Fortunately, I try not to use email at all for anything at this point. But my new email addresses that I use to do all my business and such miraculously have not turned up on that search. So we'll see how long that lasts. It's nearly impossible. But Bank of America initially reported around 11 to 12,000 potential users or customers that could have been impacted. That rose pretty quickly as data came out, close to 60,000. We don't really know what the number is. In this circumstance, it sounds like it was related to a third-party merchant payment processor. So it wasn't necessarily someone internal, but goes to show the importance of a lot of the audits that take place, PCI and SOC 2 compliance, that not only test organizations, but try to get them to reach into their vendors and provide the same level of assurance. Because you're only as strong as your weakest link, and a lot of time that can be a vendor or partner that's providing some sort of services to you.
And a lot of times these actors are trying to take advantage of those weaknesses. And I think a lot of firms, we kind of assume, well, our vendors are strong. They're what we see on the outside. So yeah, I think that's a big reminder to a lot of companies is you got to do a vendor review. You got to make sure that they're saying what they are saying, that they are secure, and that you can rely on them, and then verify that. And also have user awareness training around vendors too. Don't just trust explicitly everything either they say or what they send as well. We're starting to see a lot of that where if we have a vendor and they're compromised, well, now if they send an email out, it could be spread throughout the organization and be trusted because it's from a vendor. So having good user awareness in that is very key to protecting against an attack, because you really don't know that they've been compromised until the vendor reports it. So it's being proactive about this, really key.
That's for sure. And on the same note, American Express had a very similar breach, it sounds like, also through a third-party processor. They're just all over.
They really are.
Which leads into the propensity of recent Lockbit ransomware attacks, which were leveraged for at least part of the things we talked about, but seeing a real uptick in that. It seems to be the ransomware of choice we're talking.
Yeah, we're starting to see several different versions as well, and looking here at some of these statistics, they're estimating about 1,700 attacks since 2020 in the U.S., causing about $91 million of ransom paid to Lock. It's just been a widespread, as you said, and very devastating to a lot of organizations. Yeah. And yeah, it kind of plays along that ransomware as a service type that Black Hat utilized, allowing a lot of to be spread diversely among hacking groups, and very, very damaging.
For sure. I mean, it's widespread. I was looking at one of my security reports yesterday and aggregating the data, and I saw at least 9 different organizations that in the past week were reported to have experienced Lockbit, one of which was FBI.gov. I didn't see that. Not that I'm frequenting the FBI website on a daily basis, but it even in organizations where there is good security awareness training and security preparedness, it only takes one mistake, one oversight, and these guys are really good, especially when it comes to spear phishing, finding contact information for one particular resource and honing in on them and using them as their gateway into an organization or some sort of breach situation.
Yeah, and it seems like that's continuing to see. I know Bobcat, we had sophisticated social engineering attacks, I think they called them, on the advisor website. And again, here with this ransomware as well, Lockbit, very sophisticated social engineering attacks trying to get into a company. Once they get in, then moving laterally or exploiting vulnerabilities, they have several different options and just trying to deploy that ransomware on the system. And yeah, it all comes back again to the weakest link. How do you protect that user? And like you said, Andrew, it just seems like so many instances of this attack, and how do we protect against it? We're all getting so exposed to it, it seems.
Yeah, there are so many vectors that make it easy for attack. I touched on this, but I see in business world, I've talked to two different colleagues in the past few weeks that mentioned they're really trying, even in enterprises, to get away from the usage of email for any type of sensitive communication or anything that could lead to a breach. So I see that where I am. I don't know if you're witnessing the same thing. There's still the need to use email and from time to time, but we're going out of our way trying to set up secure file transfer using different mechanisms for invoicing and things of that nature, rather than, oh, here's your invoice and email, and trying to get creative about the way that we pass that information, including different layers of multi-factor authentication and approaches there. You really have to be, it's been a mantra for a long time, but you have to find ways to layer security, use appropriate tools to work through some of these situations, because email is a vector. It's just so dangerous. It's too easy to fall for some of these scams, and it's just, the criminals are very creative. AI is helping out now. We're hearing a lot of reports about AI being used to weaponize ransomware and other types of phishing attacks, if nothing else. I think we've talked about in previous episodes, one of the big limitations or red flags when you see a scam email is the grammar, the punctuation, the way that a message is formatted. Well,
right.
Now just take that and put the message in an AI engine and have it clean it up for you and make it sound a little bit more professional. And that's one less thing to stop it. So scary.
It really is. And I think that's a great tip about the email and seeing it as a secure or insecure method, because I mean, it was set up for server to server communication way back whenever in the 50s or 60s or 70s, whenever it was set up. And I feel like people have now treated it as, okay, this is now the way we securely communicate passwords, where we communicate sensitive documents, without any thought about how this is going to be viewed by a potential hacker. Plus, like you said, if we get rid of that as a place where sensitive documents are stored and any type of documents are stored, that ensures the user isn't expecting that. So when they see something, they can respond quickly and say, this is likely a threat, or we can even block more threats that way. Yes.
So what's on tap for spring? Any big plans?
Well, definitely hoping to get outside some more. It's starting to get nice again after we had a little cold spell there. But what about you?
Yeah, I can't wait for it to warm up. I had enough of winter, I think probably by Thanksgiving. So, and it wasn't cold. It was not a bad winter. We didn't get any snow, I think. I know you and I didn't, but it's been over 2 years now since it snowed in North Carolina, which is not all of North Carolina, but in our area. So so that's good. But I can't wait to get back out on the kayaks or, it's nice to dine outdoors and to sit out on the deck and the patio and bitch about your allergies and mosquitoes and all that type of stuff. I'll take it.
I'm ready. Yeah, sounds good. Well, it was a great conversation about cyber breaches, and hope to connect soon, Andrew. for now, everyone. Thanks again for listening and stay cyber safe out there.
Take care, everyone.